Hi. Hi everyone, thank you for attending. So we're going to talk about BPF again. So many of you probably know that we can somewhat trace many things on Linux with BPF. I want to talk about how to try and understand what may go wrong with those BPF programs themselves. So not trying to try something else, but just the BPF programs. So I'm Quentin. I've been working with BPF for the last 4 years or so, first in a company called Sixwind doing software acceleration for packet processing for networks, then at Netronome, where I worked on hardware offload of BPF packet processing. So with all of that, you may find that some of the examples are slightly more focused on BPF for network processing rather than tracing, but everything I will present should be the same for the different use cases. So BPF is the extended version of Berkeley Packet Filter. You could use it to write your own programs, for example, in C code, and then compile them into eBPF bytecode and inject that into the kernel where it is verified in order to make sure that the programs are safe and that they terminate in order to avoid security issues or crashing your kernel, this kind of small issues you want to avoid. So you have an interpreter in the kernel. You also have a JIT compiler to get better performance with BPF programs. And once they are loaded in the kernel, you can attach them to one of the existing hooks. So for example, network processing or tracing hooks. So yeah, that's about it. So the instructions are 64-bit, you have 11 registers, 500-byte stack. It's not ring complete in the sense that we don't have generic loops. Now we have bounded loops. And it comes also with a number of additional features. We have maps that are shared between BPF programming in the kernel and user space or several BPF programs. We have some functions we can call from the kernel. We have BTF, on which I'll come back later. That's about it for BPF. The following diagram can summarize the workflow. So we compile our C program into eBPF instructions that we inject into the kernel. It may or may not be JIT compiled. And at some point, we'll attach it to a hook where it's run when the event occurs. So where the function that we want to trace is triggered, for example. So the rest of the presentation will be organized like this. That's better. So reminder of eBPF, that's done. The tools to inspect BPF objects, so we have a number of them. I would like to introduce them in the first part for the different steps of that diagram I just showed before. And then in a second part, I'd like to make a somewhat deeper introduction to BPF tool, which is used a lot to try to get some information about the objects, the BPF objects loaded in the system. So that would be programs and maps, for example. I would like also to give a brief overview of the possible next steps in terms of BPF introspection and debugging, what's being discussed at the moment in the community and what we could do. So I just forgot to mention the main use cases for BPF. So we have networking, tracing. We have also some use case for socket filtering between C groups. There is a work in progress for Linux security module. And we have also more use cases, smaller ones that exist today and probably some others that will appear in the future. So let's start with the first step of our workflow. When I try to compile a C program, for example, into eBPF bytecode, at that step of the process, I want to make sure that the eBPF bytecode is consistent with the program I had in mind, with what I wanted to create. And so how can I do that? So I have this Clang command line, because you compile your C into BPF with Clang and LLVM. There is also a GCC backend now, but it's not as complete as Clang. And once I have my object file, I can use LLVM objdump to dump the bytecode of the program. So that's what we have here. B7, and the rest of zeros is putting the value 0 into register 0, which is used for storing the return value of the program. And then I have a second instruction which says exit and return from the program. So return 0, basically. I can also get the C source code in that output if I were to provide the dash T flag to Clang and use a different options with LLVM option. So that's useful to check what I have in my object file. I have an option also that might be useful, which is instead of compiling directly from C into eBPF bytecode, I can compile into assembly, eBPF assembly. And that gives me an assembly file, a .s file, that is much easier to edit if I want to change my BPF code itself without having to write all the code by hand. And if I want to test a specific sequence of instructions to test some kernel BPF feature, to test, for example, for hardware flows, we wanted to make sure that some instruction sequences were processed in a particular way, so that's useful. And Clang again can compile this assembly into regular BPF. So that's it for the first step. There's not much to debug really at this point. That's mostly to inspect things. That's also the case when you try to load your program. So you have your BPF bytecode and you're trying to mostly pass the verifier. That's something here in the kernel acting as a guardian somehow, and that often tells you no, this I don't want of it. There is a security risk, so you have to change your program. So we want the program to pass the verifier, or at least we want to understand why it's rejected, which is essential in improving the program to get something that works. So we have a variety of resources that can be used to inject the program into the kernel and possibly get this output information from the verifier, the debug information that the verifier sends back. So there is libbpf, which is in particular used in BPF tool, which is a command line utility. For networking, we have IPTC, BCC, but BCC is mostly used with tracing use cases, tracing programs. So we can load programs with those tools without having to re-implement everything ourselves and use and call manually the BPF system call. And we can do some additional management of the BPF programs and maps. So we have different things that can give us some information. We have the logs from the verifier. We have kernel logs sometimes for some specific BPF errors. For networking, we can have netlink xtack messages to from IP or TC, for example. And we have some places where we have documentation to understand those errors. So typically that would be the filter.txt documentation file in the kernel documentation, or the Cilium guide about BPF, which is really complete. So this is a non-exhaustive list of what the verifier tries to check. So if you have not valid BPF syntax, it will be rejected. Too many instructions, more than the kernel supports, it will be rejected, and so on and so forth. So just so that you can have a look at an example error message from the verifier. So I'm trying to inject a program here, and I'm trying to read a packet, a network packet, but I haven't checked that the offset inside that packet is a safe offset in the term that my packet is big enough for me to try and access the given offset in the packet. So I have a potential risk of out-of-bound access, which may never happen because if I'm trying that on the second byte of the packet, I never have an out-of-bound access because my packet will always have a MAC header. So I virtually have no risk, but the verifier doesn't care. If logically there is a risk of out-of-bound access, the program is rejected. So the message is very useful when you know what you're talking about, BPF context, invalid BPF context access. But for newcomers especially, that's very cryptic messages. It's very hard to understand what it refers to. So We would like to have some better things in the future, maybe some additional documentation or FAQs that would tell us where to look in that case. But still, we do want to have those messages, so it's especially important to be able to print them into the console, or you're just on your own to understand what's going on. So we have some debug flags that can be passed to the tools, to the various tools. So you have to provide, for example, if you were to inject all on your own your program with a custom management program coding the BPF system call yourself, you would have to be careful to pass a buffer to the kernel too, so that the kernel can write into this buffer the logs that correspond to that message we saw just before. Because we have a number of tools already, such as BPF tool and libbpf, which is used in BPF tool, such low-level buffer management is already done for us to some extent. But for example, libbpf itself does have an additional number of debug information too. So that might be information about, hey, now I'm trying to inject a program in the kernel. Or before that, hey, now I'm trying to perform ELF relocation about some stuff from a given section of your object file that I'm trying to put back to the correct place into the rest of the BPF instructions. We have a number of ELF magic stuff that's happening before injecting the program. So you may have to tell libbpf to dump this information. So for BPF tool, for example, you can have information from libbpf and from the kernel with a dash dash debug option. So that's something useful to know too. So for interpreting this information, we have that's the same locations that I mentioned earlier, the filter.txt documentation, the Cilium guide. There is also some additional information now on the documentation slash networking, I think, slash BPF, although it's still not perfect, I think. The hardcore solution, if you don't get anything better, is to go and read the kernel code. Yeah, that's not really ideal too. So yeah, maybe in the future we'll have something a bit more user-friendly. That would be nice to have. Sorry about that. So now we have managed somehow to fix our program and to pass the verifier based on the output. We managed to make it work, to add the check that was missing for the packet access. So the program is now loaded in the kernel. It's not attached yet. It can be attached. It's just here in the kernel. It's referenced by something in user space so that it doesn't get wiped out from the kernel. So that can be a file descriptor typically. Or when the program gets attached, then it's referenced in the kernel until we detach it. So we have our program sitting here, and what can we do with it? So we have a number of options, such as listing existing programs in the kernel and maps, and dumping the instructions for those programs or the content of those maps. So maps will typically be array maps or hash maps, or there are a number of additional maps for some specific use cases. So BPF tool here is the main tool that we use on a daily basis to inspect those objects when they are loaded in the kernel. I'll come back to BPF tool later, though. I'll just move on to something else, which is BTF for BPF. Sorry, for BPF type format. So since kernel 4.18, I think, so that's recent, BTF objects can be used to embed some debug information about the BPF programs and maps. So it's something that's similar to the dwarf format that's being used with GDB, for example. So you have a number of information that are stored into your object file and that are passed down to the kernel when you inject your program, which means that the kernel may have some information about the BPF programs or maps. So for programs, it's just a matter of using a recent enough version of Clang and LLVM and passing the debug flag. for maps, we have to do some wrapping in the source code. So what I have here is a classic definition of my BPF map that would be in the C source code. And I have above that to add some information, in particular about the type for the key, which is a pointer to an int, and the type for the value, which is a point to that struct. There are more details, sadly, just mostly in the commit log of that change for now. The reference for seeing how those things work would be the samples and self-tests in the kernel repository for now. We're still waiting for documentation to catch up. So an example of a program that's being dumped with a BTF format, I have the, sorry, didn't want to click. I have the regular BPF bytecode instructions here and below. And in the middle of that, I have the C instructions. I hope you can read, hopefully somewhat. So here I have an int balancer ingress, which is the name of the function. Here I have if data plus offset is superior to data end, then and my program goes on. So this is the C instructions that were used to compile the program into BPF bytecode. But I get this information from the kernel now because the kernel knows this information about the program. So that's useful to understand what's going on. And it's also being used for some other